Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the United Educators Responding to Student Death conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance during today's conference, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's presentation, Ms. Alyssa Keehan. Ma'am, you may begin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the United Educators Telephone Roundtable. I'm Alyssa Keehan, Senior Risk Management Counsel at United Educators, and I'll be the moderator for today's program regarding the difficult issue of responding to student death. I hope everyone received the roundtable reference materials, and if for some reason you didn't get the reference materials, please contact us at risk@ue.org. At the end of the program, you will be emailed an evaluation form, and I just want to encourage you all to fill out that form since we do value your feedback and use it to instruct future programs. We are recording today's program as we do all our programs, so please be sure to check the website, www.ue.org, in the next week or so for the MP3 file. I just want to quickly remind everyone that our roundtables are not designed to provide legal advice. Okay, I'm very pleased to introduce our speakers for today. Krista Lopez is the coordinator of student emergency services at the University of Texas at Austin. And on average, Krista handles about 18 student deaths a year. And her office is just one of a few in the country that is solely devoted to handling student crises. Hello, Krista, and thank you for joining us.
Hello, Alyssa. It's great to be here.
Also joining us is Sherry Crayon. Sherry is the Dean of Students at John Carroll University and has worked in student affairs for over 25 years. She previously served as the Associate Dean of Students at Hamline University and the Director of Resident Life for St. Mary's College and Assistant Director of Housing for Fresno State. Hello, Sherry. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, Alyssa. It's a pleasure to be here as well.
All right, before we start, I just want to let our listeners know that you will be able to ask questions at the end of today's program, and you can ask your questions either by email or by calling in. To pose a question via email, you can do that really at any time during the program. Just simply email your questions to risk@ue.org. That email address, again, is risk@ue.org. And we'll also give you instructions in about 45 minutes on how you can call in with questions for our panelists. Okay, I think we've cleared up all the housekeeping issues, so let's get on with our program. You might have noticed that, like those of you listening, our speakers come from very different institutions. You have UT Austin, a large public that, due to its size, has a lot of experience with student death, and John Carroll, a small, religiously affiliated private with minimal student death experience. But as you'll see, despite their differences, both have found ways to demonstrate compassion in a manner that's complementary to their institution type. And hopefully, for those of you listening, you'll find these different perspectives helpful in shaping or improving your own institution's response to student death. Our program today will address three aspects of responding to student death. First, gathering information and notifying others about a student's death. Second, ways to support the deceased student's family. And then lastly, how to support the campus community. Okay, addressing our first issue, gathering information and notifying others about a student's death, I'd like to start off with a scenario taken from an actual claim that we had here at United Educators and get the thoughts of our speakers. Okay, here's the scenario. You receive a phone call at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday night from the head of campus security. He informs you that sophomore student Joseph Utaka is dead. Joseph was found in his residence hall by his roommate in an apparent suicide. Your head of security tells you that Joseph was transferred to St. Mary's, a local hospital, but that he died while in transit. Krista, what do you do?
First thing, Alyssa, I would do is verify that the death actually occurred. It's important because during severe trauma incidents, witnesses or bystanders may interpret something as death when it really is a severe injury. Secondly, and most importantly, we want to make sure that we have the correct student contact information, date of birth, and parent contact information. The last thing we want to do is notify the wrong family and cause some confusion. That certainly can heighten a trauma incident by notifying the wrong family. Lastly, and for example, we did have a student in that wrong notification incident where this individual was hit by a car. Her name and birth date matched that of another student, and that other students' parents were actually the ones first notified. Once we realized the error, we went back and then notified the correct family, but it delayed them getting to the hospital. So verification of the death is very important. Also, it's important to train campus police and security about who to notify. Our campus police are state sworn police officers, and they're a reliable source of information. But each institution needs to make sure that their campus security has been trained on who to report a student death to. Finally, working with your local municipalities or local police and hospitals so that they, too, know who at your institution to report a student death to. We at UT Austin have worked very closely with Victim Services, which is a unit of our local police force, and they are a wonderful resource in keeping us updated as it's related to student death. When the report of a student death doesn't come from a reliable source like the police or medical examiner's office, you may need to use other means to verify the death. Unlike this scenario at UT Austin, we often find that happens where we find out a student death through the grapevine. So an example could be is that a professor may call our office and say a group of students just came into his office and said, you know, their friend died. What we do is we try and speak to those students, get more details about the situation, assess that this really is a legitimate source of information. We conduct an online search looking at sites such as legacy.com or local obituaries. And finally, we work with our campus police to see if they, too, can determine if that student did indeed pass away.
Thanks, Kristen. Sherry, how would you handle the situation previously described?
Well, I agree with Krista that you've got to verify the death. Since John Carroll is a smaller institution with a close-knit community, I would probably send someone from my staff to the hospital to verify that information firsthand. And while I'm waiting to verify the death, I would begin gathering information on the student.
And what information would you gather on the student?
Well, initially, the kinds of pieces of information I would put together would be things like personally identifiable information like their name, their address, their birth date, the student ID number, whether they're an undergraduate or a graduate student. These are all things I could get by taking a look at their student records. I also want to take a look at whether they've been involved with an athletic team or student organizations, any other clubs on campus. I would want to find out whether they have any siblings or relatives who are also enrolled at John Carroll. I would find out who that student's close friends and roommates are, because we're really going to need this information when we think about how we want to support the campus community. I'd also find out what their marital status is, and I would check into the marital status of their parents. I would pull a copy of their class schedule so that I can figure out what other students have been impacted through their classes. And I'd also want to find out whether the police have cleared the student's residence hall room or whether they might have blocked off any portion of the residence hall for their investigation. And I'd need that information to figure out how other students might be impacted.
Well, thanks, Sherry. And Krista, are there any additional pieces of information that you would seek to gather?
There's just a few. In addition to the information that Sherry's already mentioned, I would seek to determine, one, the student's nationality. If the student is an international student, it's important to involve the international office and get their advice. I would want to know the student's culture or religion so that we can be sensitive to those needs in burial processes. Here at UT Austin, we have an interfaith council, and so they play an important role in identifying connections to those particular faith or religious groups. So they're very important in helping us address a student death or emergency. And finally, I also want to look and see, is the student an employee of the institution? We want to provide support to the office where a student might be working, have our employee assistance program contact that student supervisor and colleagues, and also just procedurally, we want to know where do we determine to send their last paycheck.
All right. Going back to our hypothetical situation, let's say that you learn Joseph Utaka is an international student from Nigeria who's a member of your institution's soccer team. Joseph's parents are divorced, and his mom lives about 100 miles away from your institution, and the dad still lives in Nigeria. What are your reactions to this information? Krista, let's start with you.
I immediately would notify the following offices, our international office, most importantly. They can assist with the UT insurance company that we have a contract with, and that office can then assist with determining how the body will be moved from the United States to the home country if that's something that the family chooses to have. We have learned that our insurance coverage will not apply if the family already begins that process, so we like to get in early with the insurance company so that they can be a part of that process from start to finish. So knowing what your policy and your riders say is very important. Our international office can also help us in notifying a consulate in case we need to then notify the parent through the consulate that the student has passed away. In this case, the mom is local, so we may want to also talk to the mother about notifying the father if the parents have an amicable relationship, even though they're not married. And finally, our international office can also help getting a translator. Then I'm going to notify our interfaith council, our dean of students, our vice president for student affairs, our public affairs office. Of course, we would make contact with housing because the student resided in housing and may also have friends in housing. And most importantly, our counseling center. Our counseling center will send counselors out to counsel groups in crisis-related situations in student death, specifically related to this case scenario. If we have an athletics team involved, we would send the counseling center there to coordinate a group counseling for the team members. Recently, just about a month ago, we had a student from our women's rugby team who passed away due to a traumatic brain injury during a tournament. This was the second death experienced by the women's rugby team in the past year. So our counseling center was very important in helping to support those students affected by this death and the previous death. Our counseling center does have a 24-hour-a-day hotline that students can call any time of the year. And so we always mention that the students, if they're not comfortable in individual or group counseling, that they can always access a live counselor on the phone. So the Protocol is the company that our counseling center uses, and that is staffed by licensed social workers and counselors. And so far, that system is working really well for us.
Well, I just want to note, too, while we're on the subject of counseling, for our listeners, there is a UE benefit that would apply in the situation of a student death. UE members are eligible for up to $50,000 in grief counseling at no cost to the institution in the event of a student death, as long as your institution has both an educator's legal liability policy and any form of general liability policy with us. So if you're interested in learning more about this particular benefit, on page 20 of your resource materials, there is a brochure that describes it in greater detail. Krista, so in addition to the offices you've just mentioned, who else would you immediately notify?
In this scenario, we would definitely notify the team's coach. It might be helpful in terms of notifying teammates, providing information about the student and the family, and potentially communicating with the family. If the coach had a great relationship with that student, sometimes the families want to connect with someone who knew their student well. However, the coach and those in the athletics department are not going to take over the role of my office in a student death. They understand that my office and my experience in handling these issues are best fit, so we will take the lead and they will support us in that. After notifying the coach, our office will draft an internal memo that will be sent out to the larger group of the campus departments. One particular important department that will get this memo is the registrar's office. At our university, the registrar's office will then change the student's address of record to the registrar's office. This prevents any inappropriate communications going out to the family, such as notices about parking tickets, advertisements about upcoming events for the student's class, solicitations for money, past due library books, or anything else like that.
Well, thanks, Krista. Sherry, what are your reactions to our hypothetical situation?
Well, generally, I agree with Krista's thoughts about who to immediately notify. The only difference for John Carroll is that because we're a Catholic institution, I would also immediately notify our campus ministry department. Additionally, because we are a small school and because the mom is local, she only lives 100 miles from the institution, I'm going to try and give her personal notice rather than relying on the local police to notify her. So I would have a couple of options. If I find that the mother is Catholic, I could identify her parish and I could contact a pastor from her local parish to notify her in person. Another option that I might rely on is to ask one of our Jesuit priests to drive to her house and to notify her in person, or I would also consider driving to her house myself and telling her in person. Following my immediate 3 a.m. phone calls to a variety of staff, the residence life office, the soccer coach, the director of our counseling center, global education, campus ministry, then the following morning, here are some other things I would also do. I would definitely get together with the RAs. I want to make sure that I update them about the situation because I know that they need to have the information so that they can answer questions from the residents on their floors and provide other students with information on where to get counseling. I would certainly also notify our risk manager because they might need to report the death for insurance purposes. And I'd also want to notify our public relations person in the event that we would get any media inquiries about the student death. Certainly communicating about a death is going to be particularly important if it's a suicide.
Gary, what are some of the primary concerns in communicating a student death, or more specifically, a student suicide, and any thoughts on how to handle those concerns?
Well, one of the big concerns about suicide is that there would be a copycat suicide. So we have to be aware of the issues of suicide contagion, because I think we all know that a well-known suicide really could serve as a model for another suicide. So while it's important that we acknowledge that there has been a student's death, we certainly don't want to glorify it. For example, at John Carroll in the fall of 2009, there were two suicides within a five-week time period. And this was the first time in our institution's history that we were put in that situation, and we really struggled with how to communicate and what the best way was to communicate with our campus. So in the end, what we decided was that in our written communication, we would state that a student passed away, but we did not state that the cause of death was suicide. However, in our verbal communications, we did acknowledge that the student deaths were suicide. Another reason that I think it's really important to have official communication from the institution is that you want to be able to dispel rumors. The timing of the first student suicide was September of 2009, and at that time, the H1N1 scare was at its height. And so when we sent out a notice that there was a student death, there were assumptions right away that it was related to H1N1. So then we had another issue in terms of responding to those concerns. So as I said earlier, it certainly is important to notify your PR person or the head of your communications department about a student death. We know that public relations staff often have very good relationships with the local and national media that can be really helpful when they're covering a student death.
Well, thanks, Sherry. And I think you raise a good point. I mean, what actions can an institution take to promote responsible coverage by the press of a student suicide?
Alyssa, this is Krista, and here at University of Texas, our counseling center does a great job conducting training sessions for our student media as well as the local media about how to report on suicides so that they reduce the risk of a copycat suicide situation.
Well, thank you, and I just want to note, too, for our listeners, if you're interested in getting more information about how to communicate about suicide without increasing the risks of copycat suicides, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has put out recommendations for reporting on suicide, and there's a link to those recommendations on page 10 of the resource materials. Now I'd like to move on to the second part of our program, ways to support the deceased student's family. Krista, I know you've dealt with many families of deceased students over the years. How important is the support offered by the institution to the family of a student who has died?
It can be tremendously important. Families will often see whomever the designated point of contact is as the last point of contact with their child. So even if I am not the person who had last contact with their child, they will see me as such. So I serve as the ambassador for the institution, and we are often then the parent's last connection to the institution. So I find it key to show compassion to the family that can help speed their recovery and their healing and potentially reduce the institution's liability exposure. For example, listening to NPR recently, they talked about a study that was done regarding doctors and doctors who were sued for medical malpractice. And what they found was those doctors who actually take the time to get to know their patients and build a wonderful rapport with their patients are less likely to be sued, even if they do conduct something that would be negligible or something that would likely to be sued for. So it's really important just to be a good person, an individual, show that compassion, and show that you care about them as an individual.
Well, thanks, Krista. I know it's something that we've seen play out in UE's claims as well, and that, you know, UE's long advocated a cool head, warm heart approach to these situations. Sherry, what are some ways you try to support the deceased student's family?
You know, it's really important that at every institution that you appoint a liaison that really will be the point person with that family. I think if you think about this from the family's perspective, it's most helpful to have a single point person that the family can contact, that they can reach out to, and so they would serve as the institution's coordinator to the response of a student death. Certainly, you want to make contact with the family as soon as you can. As I said a little earlier, I would certainly want to try to tell that parent in person. And I'll give you an example from our experience at John Carroll. For the first student suicide that we had in the September of 2009, the stepmother lived right across the street from campus. And so the vice president for student affairs and I, we went to her house at 5 o'clock in the morning, knocked on her door, and woke her up and told her. She was then able to notify the biological father of the student, and that gave me an opportunity to talk with him as well because he lived out of town. So having that opportunity and that contact to tell someone in person, I think, was really helpful to that family. In that first communication, keep in mind, you know, that these families are going to be in shock. So you have to be prepared to really repeat the information that you're going to give them. Make sure that you take a business card or make sure that they write down your name and your contact information, because it's going to be really hard for them to digest the information that you're sharing with them. You certainly want to offer your sincere condolences and offer to help support them in any way that you can. When I have done this, I've asked them about who else can support them. Is there a priest or another member of a clergy that I can contact for them? I think another piece that can be really helpful is arranging their initial visit to campus. Sometimes parents want to come and visit the residence hall room, or when they come onto campus to go to a service, you want to be very sensitive to that and make sure that you have a point person ready to meet with the family.
Well, Sherry, any tips to consider in arranging that initial visit of parents to campus?
The kinds of things that we've done, we've assisted with travel arrangements. You might think about paying for parents to travel to campus or paying for them to stay at a hotel on or near campus just to make it very convenient for them once they do arrive. Certainly talk with your institution's risk manager or your business officer to see if either there's money available or if insurance will cover the parents' travel and the hotel arrangements. Make sure that you meet with the parents when they get to campus, or if possible, ahead of time. You want to show them around, and you really want to try to accommodate them and meet their needs. And as I said a minute ago, I think you'll find that some parents are going to want to see the room if the student died in their residence hall room. That was our situation, and navigating getting the parents to the room. In our situation, the families, both students came from divorced families, so navigating that was delicate, to say the least, but it was important that all the family members, they wanted to go to the room and see where the suicide took place. You may find that one of the parents wants to take items out of the room initially, and that can be a bit tricky. This did come up for us in one of our situations, and lucky for me, Gary, our risk manager, was with me, and he really said to the family that at that point it was too early in the situation to remove any items from the room. So that can be delicate. The other piece that I would suggest is providing parents with a quiet place on campus where they can meet with other family members, collect their thoughts. You might want to think about providing them with some food. Our campus ministry department has a conference room, and we use that quite a bit because it really gave people a quiet, reflective place to spend some time. As a university, we did provide some food for events. There were, prayer services that were held on campus, and we had a private catered reception after that for one of our deceased students. Depending on the student death. In our case, because we are a small school, we would always send representatives from the institution to a student's funeral.
Well, thanks, Sherry. You've given us a lot of information to think about. Krista, I'd like to hear from you now. What sorts of ways do you try to support the deceased student's family?
In my initial phone call, Lisa, with the family, I like to provide them with information on kind of death-related housekeeping issues. It's kind of an odd term, but we've created a document that we send out to the family of deceased students that explains how to claim a body and personal belongings, obtaining death certificates and how many to obtain, closing bank accounts and utility accounts, filing a tax return, obtaining death-related benefits if the student was an employee of the institution. Those are the type of things that we like to make sure they have information on.
And I just also want to point out for our listeners that on pages 12 and pages 19 of the resource materials, there's a copy of the checklist that Krista just mentioned and the condolence letter that UT Austin sends to parents of deceased students. Krista, what's the reaction of families when the institution offers to provide this death-related information?
The families tend to be extremely grateful. In my experience, most parents who have lost a child feel very helpless, and they really just want to do something or have some tasks to focus on. And so they find the guidance on those death-related tasks extremely helpful.
In addition to this information, what are some other ways that you try to support the family?
One of the things we do here at the University of Texas is we have a flag-lowering ceremony for students, and we offer the family an opportunity Monday through Friday between 8 and 10 a.m., so it's kind of a quieter time on campus, for the family and friends of the student who have passed away along with any faculty or staff members to be present at the Texas flag, which is in front of our UT Tower, kind of a monumental place on campus. To gather our ROTC students, march down from the steps of the tower to the tower garden area where the flag is. I have a student who's a member of the band who will play the trumpet and play taps and maybe a couple other songs that the family may remember. And the flag is lowered to half-mast. It stays there all day, and there's even a placard outside the flag area that denotes why the flag is at half-mast. I then open it up and give the family a chance to talk, and I kind of conclude everything with a poem entitled Remember Me, and that's published first by Debbie Ann Walters in a bereavement magazine, and it's also in the book What to Do When the Police Leave. In addition to the individual flag-lowering ceremony every year, the University of Texas has an event on the last day of classes called UT Remembers. And at UT Remembers, we honor those members of the university community who have passed away in the last year. That list includes faculty, staff, students, and some honored guests. In addition to the checklist that we offer families when we send our condolence letters, we also share with them information about the Tree Memorial Program. And the Tree Memorial Program is a means in which a family can choose to purchase a tree that will then be planted on campus in honor of the family member who they're remembering. We may also facilitate meeting the student's professors or department for their academic major. Sometimes the department can also support the family as well. We had a student who was murdered in her off-campus apartment, and that department and was very hurt by the loss of her. And so it was the School of Architecture, and they decided to set up a memorial bench in the courtyard of the architecture program in remembrance of this young lady. Finally, in addition to the condolence letter and checklist and other things that we do, we provide the family a book. And we have three different books that we choose from depending on the nature of the student's death. So for natural causes, I tend to send a book called I Wasn't Ready to Say Goodbye. If the death was as a result of a crime, there's a book titled What to Do When the Police Leave. And for suicides, we tend to send a book called No Time to Say Goodbye, which is specific about losing a loved one to suicide.
Let me just note, too, for our listeners, if you're interested in learning more about the books that Krista just mentioned, on page 11 of the resource materials at the end of that student death checklist, you'll see a citation to these books, and I just want to note that they're all available on Amazon for purchase. All right, thank you, Krista, and I'd like to get back to our hypothetical scenario involving the suicide of student-athlete Joseph Utaka. Let's say that Joseph Utaka's mom arrives on campus and is very angry at the institution. She's learned that her son did not attend classes in the weeks leading up to his death and feels that someone at the institution should have alerted her to this. She tells you she has hired an attorney and is asking for all documents related to the death. What do you do?
This is Kristen. We actually had a very similar situation occur here at the University of Texas. We had a student who had not been enrolled for three semesters. He was basically pretending for his family's sake that he was still in college. He was living off campus in an apartment, and so he just withdrew from the university but just never shared that with his family. He invited his entire family to graduation, informing them that he was graduating even though he wasn't. And while the family was attending graduation, he actually committed suicide. His parents were understandably extremely angry at the institution and at the situation. And really the blame came out on the institution even though we didn't have a role in it. When the parents are angry like that, it's a natural tendency to want to pull back. But what I've learned is the parents' anger is not about us. It's about their grieving process. And the more compassionate I am with the family, the less hostile they are. So I wouldn't change any of our protocols. I would just continue to reach out to the mother and offer all the services we just discussed.
Well, thanks, Krista. And as a lawyer, I just want to give my two cents about the mom's request for documents and her hiring of an attorney. You know, if the parents are represented by counsel, certainly the institution should notify its lawyer, but it doesn't necessarily mean that all institution communications then have to or should go through counsel. I think your comments, Krista, about continuing to show compassion even in the face of hostility are really right on. And with respect to the documents, again, you certainly want to have the institution's counsel review those documents before turning them over. But in UE's experience, it's generally, in the cases that we've seen, been best to turn those documents over to the family early on if they request them. And this is because the facts are going to come out eventually, particularly when a situation is litigated. And in this scenario, it sounds like the mom is gearing up for a lawsuit. So it's been UE's experience that by cooperating with the parents and sharing the documents early on, that can be helpful to reducing their anger and even in some cases preventing a claim. We did have a situation where a student died while under the influence of illegal drugs at the time of the student's death. And once the parents and their lawyer learned this fact through documents that the institution had provided them with, they decided to not pursue a claim. So before we move on to our last segment, I just want to highlight for our listeners that on page 8 of the resource materials in section G of that student death checklist, there are different ideas for supporting the deceased student's family. So please feel free to take a look at that section for additional thoughts on this subject. Okay, moving on to our final segment of today's program, supporting the campus community. Sherry, how do you identify those who might be impacted by a student's death?
Well, in the case of the two student suicides that we had on campus, we really had to think about all the individuals who might be impacted by the death. So we started by making a list of the deceased student's friends. We talked to the friends. We said, who else needs to hear about this? Certainly, we were trying to tell the friends in person. We did not want students to hear about this through the grapevine. So the first thing we did is really contacting the friends who found out ahead of time and then saying, who else is it that we need to tell right away? Another thing that we did is we had one of our counselors attend all of the classes that the student was enrolled in. So the Monday and Tuesday after the deaths, we had a counselor go to each of those classes to talk about that student and to talk about the death and to offer counseling. Another thing that we found in our experience, one of our students had gone to one of the local Catholic high schools where there were lots of students from that high school here. So we had to pay attention to those students, and we made sure to notify all of them. And that was something we hadn't thought about initially, but another staff member alerted us to that. So think about the feeder schools for your own institution. Earlier in the program, I mentioned that we notified the RAs. Because both of our student suicides took place on campus in residence halls, for us that communication with the RAs was very critical. They are our eyes and ears. They connect with our students. They provide resources. And they are people who can really help find out who might be struggling. From an employee perspective, our human resources department was certainly concerned about our employees, so they offered employee assistance program services immediately following the student deaths. And additionally, our counseling center also reached out to employees as well.
Now, once you were able to identify those individuals and groups that might be in need of support, how did you go about supporting them?
Well, for the roommates of our students, we certainly offered to move them out of the room immediately. And in both situations, the roommates took us up on that right away. In the second situation that we handled, as it turns out, five of the deceased closest friends, they all moved out of that residence hall into another residence hall. That was really important for them, and we were just fortunate that we were able to find space in a residence hall that we could house them together in. Another thing that we did to support our students was we had student affairs administrators spend time in our residence halls during the first night after these incidents took place. We wanted to have staff be available. One thing I would certainly want to make sure that people know is our counseling folks, we wanted to use our counseling center to our staff to be available at our counseling center, and so we were trying to use other staff on campus who could be available as well and who really wanted to help out. So don't forget, in addition to your counseling center folks, there are many other folks who really want to be supportive in a situation like this. Another way we supported students a little later on is we brought therapy dogs into our residence halls. This turned out to be a huge hit with our students. And we have, for the last year and a half, we have brought therapy dogs in regularly for our students. We also had my staff and our counseling center folks, really we have checked in pretty regularly on the students who were the closest friends of the deceased. I got to know a number of these students personally, and I see them on campus, and I think that it's been helpful for them to know that there's a person here and other folks who really want to support them. During the time of the student deaths, we certainly were able to provide transportation to and from the wake. We made sure that we asked faculty to be supportive of letting students out of class to attend the wakes and to attend the funerals.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, in the case of a suicide, is it particularly difficult to show concern to the campus community without then running the risk of glorifying the event and triggering copycat suicides?
It really is a difficult situation, Alyssa, because, for example, in the fall of this past academic year, we had a student who killed himself in our campus library, and he actually came through campus discharging his firearm prior to killing himself. We had to make the decision to shut down the institution for the day and then determine when do we open up the university, and then after that we had to grapple with how and when do we begin to use that portion of the library where his suicide took place. So, for example, the first day that the university reopened, the floor where the incident took place was shut down. And then we opened it up in sections, but we also didn't want to open it up in too small of sections so that students knew exactly where he had actually killed himself.
This is Sherry, and we also found the issue of showing concern without glorifying a suicide to be a difficult one. Some of the things we did to help us out, we reached out to some local experts on folks who have a lot of experience handling suicide. We brought in Paul and Darcy Granello from Ohio State. They've done a lot of extensive research on college student suicides and suicides in general, and we had good conversations with them about the whole issue of copycat suicides. How do you avoid that, but how do you still provide support to the campus community? You know, another thing, we did not shut down our institution, and we did not cancel classes to allow the whole community to attend funerals, even though we got some criticism for that. But as we thought about those situations, we really decided that part of what we wanted to demonstrate is that we needed to continue to move on. The people who needed to grieve and who needed to be present at the funerals certainly were allowed to do that, but we opted not to cancel classes for an entire day. I guess my piece of advice would be to really handle this. It's a case-by-case decision. That's not to say that we wouldn't cancel classes in a different kind of situation.
All right, before I ask a final question of our speakers, I'd like to go ahead and announce that we're opening the phone lines for participant questions or comments, and it's very easy to do. All you need to do is press star 1 on your touch tone phone, and you'll be put in line to ask a question or make a comment to one of our speakers. If you decide for any reason that you don't want to talk, just simply press the pound key, and that will take you out of the queue. If asking a question or making a comment by phone, just remember to turn off the listen-only or mute feature on your phone because we want to make sure we can hear you when it's your turn. And remember, if you prefer, you can always submit a question anonymously via email. Just send your questions to risk@ue.org. That's risk@ue.org. All right, getting back to our program, Krista, what actions does UT Austin take to reach out to those impacted on campus by a student's death?
Alyssa, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we try to integrate our students and faculty into the flag-lowering ceremony that we hold. We also provide counseling on an individual basis, on a crisis walk-in basis. We have group counseling sessions for grief and loss in particular. Our counseling center does have its 24-hour counseling hotline. Related to suicide, we also have a suicide prevention coordinator, so we use her expertise in that area. And then we also don't want folks to forget to support the staff that's handling the incident. Even myself and Sherry, we're all affected by something like this. These situations are emotionally draining, and particularly if you have multiple deaths in a short period of time. For example, I had a situation 2 years ago where we were notified of 4 student deaths in one day. It was very overwhelming for me. Two of the students died in a car accident together. One student died of a natural cause, and the other student died in a car accident on his own. So you want to make sure that you get your employee assistance program or locally trained counselors in critical incident stress management to reach out to individuals who are most affected. And finally, don't forget your housekeeping staff or those individuals who may have to clean up after a death that occurs on campus.
Well, I want to thank you both, Sherry and Krista, for sharing your valuable thoughts and experiences on responding to student death. We're ready to take our first question or comment now. The phone lines are open. Just press star 1 on your touch-tone phone to be placed into the queue to talk. Or, again, you can email your questions anonymously to risk@ue.org. All right, operator, we are ready for our first telephone question.
Our first question comes from the line of Hudson Valley Community College. Your line is open.
Hello, this is Fred Alberti, Director of Public Safety here at Hudson Valley Community College. I'm a retired Albany, New York police officer, and in my experience in investigating deaths in the past, the coroner's office or the medical examiner's office was completely responsible for making many of the next of kin communications. We seldomly got involved in that process unless there was some unusual circumstance. I'm just wondering, in terms of the other states, Texas, everywhere else, it seems like you guys there in Texas or wherever have, you know, quite a bit of this process that you do, and it's unusual, to say the least, here in New York State.
Any thoughts, Krista or Sherry?
Yes, Fred, I would agree that here in Texas, we definitely also work with our medical examiner's office or the sheriff's office or the constable to officially notify families of the student's death. Once our office is made aware that the family has been notified, we then make that initial call as the point person for the university to the family. But we, in all cases, try to make sure we are not the first persons to make that notification.
And, Fred, this is Sherry. I think for John Carroll, it's probably a bit different because we're such a small school. We try to, you know, reach out to that family personally if something happens on campus. In the first suicide situation, we were able to contact the family right away. While we walked across the street to meet with the stepmother, another one of our staff was at the hospital where they had taken the student. And while we were talking with the stepmother, we got official notification that the student had passed away, which we were pretty sure of to begin with. In our second situation, unfortunately, it was a lot messier. The coroner's office was called out to the scene. It took them about 45 minutes to before they released the body and took it to the coroner's office because students found that the deceased, they started texting their friends. And in the end, unfortunately, the family was local, and they found out about the death of their son because students were texting, and the texting chain just circulated around the area. And that was really devastating for that family. So unfortunately, we were not. It was our intention to notify the family first, but because of the communication channels, that didn't happen.
Well, thank you. And our next question here is an email question. They want to know any thoughts or best practices on how to clear out belongings from a deceased student's room. Sometimes the parents don't want to do this, and you don't want to rush them. Any thoughts on this? Krista, we'll start with you.
Yes, Alyssa. And to all the listeners, we definitely work very closely in our office. My office is Student Emergency Services, and we're housed within the Dean of Students' office. So we're separate from our housing office. And we will work closely with our housing department, if the student lives on campus, to arrange for boxes and then to have that discussion with the family of, do they wish for us to box up the belongings or would they like to do so? And we try to give them as much time as possible. We understand that the grief process takes a long time for individuals, and so we certainly don't want to rush them into something. What I have found, though, in the past is that a lot of times families do want to come in immediately and at least get some of those initial mementos. And sometimes they want to get actual clothing that the student will wear and be dressed in for their services.
Sherry, any thoughts? Or
I agree with Krista. You really want to see what the family wants to do. We have been able to take those student rooms offline for the remainder of the academic year. I know that that's not always possible, but we were able to do that a couple of years ago. And because it was a suicide as opposed to a natural cause of death, I knew that students would be very hesitant to want to live in those rooms. I think if in our we had another situation of a student death that was an accident, and he had a residence hall room. But we've always had families who've wanted to come in and clear out the belongings. I think if they didn't want to, we would box it up and probably hang on to it for a while and then probably donate it if the family really didn't want those items.
All right. Well, our next question is another email question. They want to know, how would the response to our hypothetical situation change if the death occurred off campus? So really, do you have any tips for dealing with off-campus death, or does that change anything?
Alyssa, I would have to say, this is Kristen, our situation doesn't change whether it's on or off campus. It may be more difficult for us to assist in packing of the belongings because some of the majority of our students at the University of Texas actually live off campus. And so for us, you know, our students live in rental properties, whether it be apartments or local homes or basement apartments or garage apartments. And so it's very difficult for us to assist with the belongings piece. But we approach the situation just as we would an on-campus student. And we also recognize that even if a student lives off campus, they may have friends that live on campus. And so we know that our community as a whole may be impacted the same way whether they live on or off campus.
Thanks. And Sherry, any thoughts about dealing with an off-campus situation? Any considerations for institutions to think about?
Well, I agree with Krista. I don't know that we would really change much, if anything. I think the reality is if something happens off-campus, it's probably going to take my office longer to hear about it. That's, I think, part of what may happen. So I might not hear about it for a couple of days. But in general, we would certainly do the same outreach with the parents. You know, we had a student death this past January. The death occurred in Philadelphia over the Christmas holiday. But as soon as we were aware of it, we were certainly in touch with that family. And, you know, we did all the same kinds of things we would normally do.
All right. Our next question is another email question. They want to know, how long after a student's death should you maintain contact with the family? For example, should you send something to acknowledge the anniversary of the student's death? So, Sherry, any thoughts on that?
Well, this past fall was the one-year anniversary for both of the young men who committed suicide. We did have a prayer service on campus at the one-year anniversary. I attended both of those, which gave me an opportunity to have contact with the families. We did not invite the whole campus community. It really was for the family and for close friends. The families were incredibly appreciative. I don't know that we would do that again for every anniversary, but I felt it was important to do it for the first anniversary.
And Krista?
I would say that our flag lowering ceremonies allow us to have some continued contact with the family. They typically occur within 60 days of our office being notified of the student's death. And then our UT Remember Ceremony is, like I had stated earlier, the last class day of every spring semester. And so once again, we connect with the families and friends of those students and community to really remember that student. I do have some families who I use on a case-by-case basis. They choose to keep in contact with me, and so I keep my door and my phone lines open to them. And there are some families who, even well after a year, I still have contact with and still communicate with, whereas other families sometimes are done working with the institution. It's just too hard to continue bringing up those memories of the institution and the fact that their student's no longer alive.
Right, another email question here. Any tips for dealing with a campus homicide? Krista, any thoughts on when there's been a campus homicide? How does it change anything, or any issues to consider?
We have had two circumstances at the University of Texas in the past few years. where the homicides have not occurred on campus, but in close proximity and have involved our students. One of the circumstances actually involved two of our students who committed the homicide towards another individual who was not a UT student. And that has been all over the news, and we actually have files on those individual students, and we track the documentation and paperwork with our court cases. And the reason we do that is just to make sure that we're keeping up with what's going on with our now former students and their involvement. And because it's a political thing, we know that often and a high publicity situation, we often know that sometimes reporters may come back and ask us questions about it. So we continue to need to be apprised of it. The other situation involved two of our students who were killed off campus in an off-campus apartment. And again, when those court cases come up, oftentimes the media will come back to us to get our opinion on decisions being made. Sometimes the families are then in town for those court cases, and so I may reconnect with the family during that time. So there are special circumstances that you do need to take into consideration, and oftentimes it involves a lot more of the media and public relations aspect in addition to everything else you typically do.
Sherry, any thoughts there?
You know, to be honest, I have no experience with dealing with homicides. Not yet, anyway, and hopefully I won't.
Yeah, knock on wood on
yeah.
that one. Got another email question here. They want to know if a residence hall room is used the following year to house another student where a death has occurred. So do you let the incoming student know about the death that previously occurred in the room? Do either of you have some thoughts on that?
Well, this is Sherry. We have used the rooms the following year. We did not tell students what had occurred, but students, and I'll give, in one case, students did find out about it, and they were a little nervous, and so we made arrangements for one of our Jesuit priests to meet with them and to bless the room, and they found that to be very helpful.
Oh.
I was going to say, Alyssa, yeah. In our situations that we've had students pass away on campus, we have used those rooms again. I think similar to Sherry, we've taken those offline if possible for the remainder of that current year. We've offered to move the roommate during that current year. And in some situations, I've had roommates who want to move, and then other situations, the roommates really want to stay because that's their remembrance and that's kind of their connection still. But the following year, we continue to use those rooms, and we do not notify the current students. We do have our environmental health and safety office who does a thorough cleaning of the rooms and removes any bloodborne pathogens. And if they're not available to do so, the university contracts out with a crime scene cleanup company to actually come in and make sure that the room is completely sanitized appropriately.
All right, well, we've got time here for one last question. You know, Sherry and Krista, you've both handled some very difficult student death situations. Any thoughts or tips for our listeners on how to best deal with these tragedies?
Well, this is Sherry, and I can start. Certainly, you don't go into this dealing with it alone. In my experience, there have been many other people on campus who have been supportive and helpful, and we've all worked together, and I think that that's a critical piece. The other, for schools that don't have a lot of experience, if you do have a student death, I would strongly encourage you to do a debriefing a week or two afterwards. We did that in our first situation and really talked about areas that we could improve on, and I think that was very important and very helpful. I guess my final piece of advice is it's really important to take care of your staff, and I know we've talked about that, but I would like to emphasize that again. This is really tough work, and people need to be supported.
Krista, any thoughts?
I would just add to what Sherry said, because everything she said is right on, and definitely first and foremost is support staff and support of yourself. You have to be able to acknowledge your own self and kind of what your limits are. I gave the example earlier of, you know, having four student deaths in one day. I walked into my supervisor's office later that day and said, okay, I'm going home. I'm done. and it's okay to do that. It's okay to take care of yourself. I'm an avid runner, and so when I have a tough day, the first thing I do is I leave my office and I go for a run. Making sure, like Sherry said, that you have protocols in place. Certainly you hope this never happens, but on a large campus like the University of Texas, we know we're going to have student deaths. And I know that it's part of my job responsibilities to handle those situations. So I am prepared to handle it because I've set protocols in place and because we have a system that works with handling those issues. If you don't have that set up yet, I highly encourage you to benchmark, look what other institutions are doing, take recommendations from this teleconference, and really put those to use.
Well, thank you, and our time is up, and many thanks to all of you who participated in today's roundtable, and special thanks, of course, to our panelists. We hope you found the program informative and that you will check UE's website for further information on our next roundtable. Please don't forget to fill out the online evaluation form you'll receive, and this concludes today's roundtable. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect. Everyone, have a wonderful day.